Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. It is beautiful. It's great. However, I do fear for those folks on the East Coast. They're talking about some really, really bad weather going that way. I'm in the Midwest. I'm in the middle right here. And it's frightening. And I hope some of those folks, they're already canceled, you know, flights in some of those cities. We'll have some more information on that later on in the show. I want to say welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. I'm on the north side of the city of Chicago, and it's a beautiful place. The entire city is beautiful. I mean, you hear a lot of negativity about Chicago on the national news. Some of it's true, but it's really a nice and fun place to live. It's expensive. So I wouldn't, there are a lot of people who have left the city because of that. And I'm pretty sure, the taxes, factor into that, the property taxes, you know, and, it's expensive. It's no doubt. I get pissed off every day when every time I hear that these politicians are finding ways to tax you, finding ways to get into your pockets and then saying that it's all for your benefit. It's good for you that we're doing this because we want you to be healthy and all a bunch of BS. Okay, so follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here. Follow me on Blog Talk right here, as I just mentioned. Instagram. I'm on Instagram somewhere, and I have a few websites up and around. I'm on Google. You just Google my name, and there I am. Hopefully, but you know what? There's I Googled my name one day. Several times, and I come up with my name is George Wilder, George Wilder Jr., as you probably know. I Googled my name one day, and three or four names came up. you know, one of the names was, I guess his name was George Wilder, and he was a criminal, an inmate, a thug, a convict. And thugs nowadays, thugs, bad guys, they look like bad guys. So if you see somebody dressed who looks like a bad guy, more than likely he is a bad guy. And this guy with my name, you know, he looked like he killed his whole family. and I was devastated with my name. And, I Googled myself and this came up alongside my name. But the thing is, I was in fear because a lot of the people who I'm friends with and who I've had on the show, you know, all people around the world go and, Google me, and suddenly this criminal pops up in their faces. You know, I don't want them to think that's me. You know, I mean, of course there's more than one George Wilder Jr. in the world, you know, so, but I want the websites and all of these social media types to get it right, okay? Because I don't want somebody thinking that I spent 30, 40 years in prison, you know, and things like that. But I guess it happens to just about everybody. If you, you know, Google your name, you're going to come up with 3 or 4 different types of people with your name. And some of those people are not good. And you have to kind of, you know, separate yourself from those people. You got to find out a way to do that. And it's possible. It can be done. And basically, you know, if you're online a lot, then, you know, people will find you and they'll find out the real person that you are, you know. So, I mean, when I first did that, it astonished me, you know, because there were images of George Wilder Jr. No, that's not me. That's not me. All right. I think it's about 25, 28 degrees in Chicago. It's 6:06. Okay, I believe we're going to have a surprise guest on the show today. I'm not sure. The show must go on at any rate. I want to say welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Listen to my show before you listen to anyone else's show. My show is the show, not just in Chicago, but around the world, around the nation, around in every country. And I'm proud of that. I am totally proud of that. And I want to say once again, I'm always saying this, There we go. However, I do mean it from my heart. I want to thank everybody who has said so many nice and great things about the show and about myself and about me. And I do appreciate it. I want to thank everybody who has gone to my website, downloaded some of my work on Amazon. That's totally appreciated. And I want to say to some of those people who have told me to keep doing it, keep it up, don't let anything stop me. I appreciate those folks too. I appreciate everybody. If you have negative comments about me or the show, share them. I mean, I'm always looking for any kind of feedback in order to make myself better and my show better, so that I can present it to the world in the way that I, you know, see fit, you know, because I run everything. I'm like Donald Trump. I call the shots here. But seriously, I want to say thanks to everybody who has said so many nice and wonderful things. And sometimes I wonder if I deserve all of that, you know, because there is still a lot of work to be done. There's still a lot of work to be done, if there have been any work done at all, in terms of the world that we are currently living in. And the George Wilder Jr. Show is going to be here as long as it can. And so don't worry about the George Wilder Jr. Show. And you know, if we're not on the air for some reason, maybe we're taking a few days off. You know, you can always podcast shows that I've done. Past shows, they're just as great. They're just as informative, funny, ridiculous, with some great, great, great guest on the show. I try not to have any guest on the show unless they can contribute to, making the world a better place. They have to have something to share with you in order to make your life better. That's what it's all about, making your life better. And if you have something you would like to share in terms of making the world a better place, be my guest. You can share it right here, 347-857-1762. You know, or you can call in another talk show and share it with them. Just share it. It doesn't have to be with me. It could be with anybody. But what you want to do, you want to be a part of making America. Wow, I'm getting ready to say making America great again. Making America. I mean, because right now, folks, if you think about it, America is at a less place in the world. We are at the bottom now. We are we're not in a good place. We're not in a good standing in terms of being in the world, in terms of other countries. We're down there in the sewer. I mean, we are. We just have to dig ourselves out of the sewer, and one way of doing that is to resist. I mean, this guy, the latest ridiculous BS that's going on with the Trump family is that he has a war on Nordstrom. Actually, he has a war on businesses in general because they are dropping his daughter's brand of clothing, Ivanka. They're dropping her brand of clothing from their stores. And he can't take it. He's the president of the United States, and he is having a hissy fit because they are dropping his daughter's brand from their store. He doesn't give a damn what the reason is or why. He just goes off on a tantrum because they don't want some product in their store that's not selling. Okay? And he's going off on a tantrum. It's not the business owner's fault that his daughter's clothing line is not selling. People are not buying. You can't blame him. He's out there trying to bully them. He's calling them names. He's attacking them. You know, they said some of those businesses, the owners of those businesses have came out and said that her brand is not selling, so they're going to stop carrying it. And then you got some businesses out there saying that we're going to keep her brand, but we're going to take the name off her clothing and mix it in with other clothing. I think that's deceptive. So if you go into like a Nordstrom or some other high-end store, her clothes will be there, but you will not know where they are from because they're going to take the tag off of it. So if you go into, let's say if you go into Macy's or something and you go to buy clothes or something and you go over there, you say, well, this is nice. So, you know, you're going to be buying a Trump line of clothes without knowing that it's a Trump line of clothes because there's nothing on there that's saying where it came from. I think that's deceptive. But that is, I think that would be a business that is falling into letting Donald Trump bully them. The guy is a straight up bully. He can't help but being a bully. He's been a bully all of his damn life. And now he's not only is he bullying businesses, but now he's bullying judges. He's bullying. And getting back to the business venture on this thing, it's a conflict of interest for him, president of the United States. And then running, supporting, and being a part of a business that's bringing in money. That's conflict of interest. That's grounds for impeachment. But Trump doesn't care. I don't think the guy's going to get impeached because I think that the Republicans want this idiot. But I think Trump is, the guy's just going too far now. He's bullying judges. You know, now he's bullying a judicial branch of judges now. And trying to figure out if his band should be if his band of Muslims should be reinstated. But he's already bullying them because he figured they're going to rule against him. This guy is, and now he's bullying a new set of judges. He has a war with the media. He has a war with anybody who criticizes something that he does or says that is warranted criticism. He has even talked about all of us who did not vote for him. He called us all losers. This guy is something else. He's unfit. Either way I say it, it is totally. We are in some really, really rough waters with this guy. I mean, we have fallen in the world. Our standings in the world have just dipped to the bottom. People are saying they want to leave the United States. This guy is a bully. He's a bully, and he's breaking the law. He's breaking every law that is, including constitutional law. He doesn't care. Republicans wipe their butts with the Constitution. They don't give a damn about the Constitution, and they don't give a damn about Americans. Republicans care about one thing, their party. Their party. To hell with everybody else. It's their party. Donald Trump is now bullying judges, judicial judges. And this thing may even go to the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court don't rule his way, don't reinstate the ban on Muslims, he's going to criticize the Supreme Court. This guy is nuts. Even the judge that he chose to replace Anton Sakrida, the judge, this guy going to try to sit on the Supreme Court to fill that vacancy on the Supreme Court. Even this person is saying that what Donald Trump is doing or saying to the judges, he's calling it demoralizing. And it is. It totally is. This guy is just off his damn rocker. He is off his rocker. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know jack about governing. He's trying to change everything. He's trying to make everything into a Trump brand, you know, because he wants you to think that he's King Trump, Emperor Trump. I mean, this guy, he's got some kind of a grip or hold on his family. I'm thinking that some of these people in his family probably think he needs to see a psychiatrist or something. This guy is totally not good for America, and we got him. And right now he has done so many impeachable offenses. I don't understand why Congress isn't drawing up impeachment papers on this guy right now as I speak. He is bad for America, folks. I mean, if you are a Donald Trump fan, you know, I mean, so be it. But I'm not. But that doesn't mean that you cannot listen to the show. You know, you can disagree with me. You can agree with me. It's up to you. You know, but I'm going to speak my piece because it's my show. And I'm here to do that. And I think Donald Trump is just bad news. You know, he's got a war on businesses now that refuses or will not carry his daughter's brand of clothing because, simple, they're not selling. I mean, if you had a business you know, if, and you had a product in your store that was not selling, would you continue to carry it? Exactly. I wouldn't either. But Trump is bullying these businesses. He's basically saying that they're lying. He's saying that they're lying about his daughter's brand that is totally not selling. You know, and if his daughter and if his daughter's brand of clothing is not selling, we all know why. It's because of him and his policies and what he stands for. You know. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Let's try
this.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please. Thank you, people. Take your pussy hats off and sit down. My God, there must be 1.5 million people here. I tell you. It's day 7 in the war on facts. What the fuck is going on? I turned on my iPhone today to check the news, and Siri said, "Are you sitting down?" But hey, you know what? We're still here.
So far.
There was a big women's march on Saturday. Huge. You talk about huge. Over 3 million around the world. The largest gathering of women since the last time they collected the Bill Cosby victims together. Very impressive. Millions of women on all the continents.
It was important for him to be briefed because the plan was to brief the president-elect as well, that these allegations had been circulating.
Pamela, hang on. We're going to go to Chicago, listen to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch talking about the civil rights investigation into the Chicago Police Department.
Because they are the indispensable members of the team that led to this announcement today. Now, one of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive, and transparent. But as the events of recent years in Ferguson, in Baltimore, Cleveland, and many other cities have made clear, far too many Americans feel that they do not receive that kind of law enforcement. And far too many communities suffer because of painful divisions between police officers and citizens. Divisions that make it significantly harder to reduce crime, to expand opportunity, and to ensure that every American, including our police officers, can be safe and secure in their neighborhoods. Now, in December of 2015, as part of that work, I announced that the Department of Justice, after careful review and extensive consultation with state and local officials and community leaders, was opening an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department had engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal statutory law. And for the past 13 months, our investigators have worked tirelessly to obtain a full and an accurate and an impartial picture of policing in Chicago. They have conducted hundreds of interviews with citizens, with officials, with officers. They have reviewed thousands of pages of documents. They have observed Chicago Police Department officers on the job. And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern or practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. These are serious problems, and they bear serious consequences for all Chicagoans. And as I said when I announced this investigation, the systems and policies that fail ordinary citizens also fail the vast majority of Chicago Police Department officers who risk their lives every day to serve and protect the people of Chicago. And during the course of our investigation, the department heard from countless officers who were themselves disillusioned and discouraged by strained trust, by inadequate training, poor oversight, and inattention to officer wellness and safety. And those officers are proud to wear the badge, but they recognize that they lack the support, both from the community and from the city, to properly do their jobs. And they understand that repairing trust with the communities that they serve will require difficult and meaningful reforms. Now, to Chicago's credit, the city has not been standing still since we announced our investigation at the end of 2015. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them. Now, of course, this announcement comes at a critical juncture for this proud city. Chicago is grappling with a deeply troubling rise in violent crime, one that has already claimed far too many lives. Now, fighting violent crime has long been a priority for the Justice Department as well. And we at the Justice Department have brought our full resources to bear on this issue, from the FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the DEA, who've participated in joint task forces to combat violence, to the department's violence reduction network. Now, our efforts to work closely with local authorities to fight violence in a number of ways began long before we opened this investigation, and they will continue during and after this investigation. And no one understands that better than Zach Farden. Under his outstanding leadership, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois has worked literally around the clock to tackle gun violence, gang cases, and other serious crimes afflicting this great city. And at the same time that Zach's office actively partnered with our Civil Rights Division on this pattern and practice investigation, the prosecutors in his office in 2016 charged the highest number of illegal firearm cases in any year since 2004. So the U.S. Attorney's Office here and federal investigative agencies have truly ramped up their efforts to help stem the recent rise in violence. But as I have seen firsthand from my community policing tour, that work is undermined if the community does not trust law enforcement. And that's why, in addition to increasing intelligence efforts and enhancing crime-fighting operations, we're also working with the city on a range of other critical initiatives, from youth outreach to counseling for the victims of crime. And these efforts will continue, and they will only be strengthened by the reforms that we are announcing today. Because successfully reducing and preventing violent crime requires a collaborative and trusting relationship between officers and residents. And where that relationship is broken, as it is in far too many of Chicago's neighborhoods, it's much harder to solve crimes and reduce violence. By making the changes necessary to bring constitutional, community-oriented policing to Chicago, the city and the police department will place itself in a much stronger position to combat the scourge of violence. And finally, I want to commend the people of Chicago for their patience and for their resilience throughout this long process. Community police relations is an especially difficult issue. It taps into long histories, deep beliefs, and strong opinions, and there's no lack of strong opinions here in Chicago. But it also forces us to honestly acknowledge.
All righty. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're back from a break, a light break, folks, but we're back. And I'm glad you're still out there. You're still with me. It's great. It's wonderful. And I hope wherever you are in the world that everything is going fine. I wish you nothing but good thoughts and all the luck in the world, because we're going to need it, folks. We are in a trying time in the city of Chicago and all around the world. We're going to need all the luck we can, but we got each other. And so it's going to take people power to deal with a lot of things that we see that may be going wrong in our world. Never think that you do not have the power to get anything done. Never think that you do not have the power to change things. If you don't like something, get out there and change it. All right. All right. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio, all around the world. Let's see if we can't go to the phones here, folks. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead. I believe I know who you are.
Hi, George. Jim Mosquera, your guest for tonight?
Yeah.
George, this is Jim Mosquera.
Are you there?
Tonight?
Yeah, I know. I booked you. And welcome to the show. Tell us something about yourself. What do you do? And are you an author?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm an author of I'm developing a trilogy right now under the protagonist by the name of Chandler Scott. The first two books in the trilogy have been released in 2016. The third book will be released probably sometime this spring. You mentioned earlier about some of the bad news and bad things that are going on in Chicago, and it's kind of fitting that we're having this discussion. The book 2020 is kind of a mix of politics, some cyber mayhem, if you will, and some financial crisis kind of mixed in, and it culminates in the presidential election of 2020. I know people obviously have had a pretty trying time with the election season that we just went through. This is a book that takes you a little bit into the future, and the events obviously that happened in the election of 2016. Kind of foreshadow, if you will, and obviously moving into 2017, a lot of events are kind of foreshadowing what I wrote about in this book. And again, it's a fictional book, so obviously it's entertainment. But the people that have read it so far and some of the reviews that I've seen on Amazon, some people have mentioned that it really hits close to home, that it's almost too realistic for them. So it's actually not a bad thing, because that's what I intended, is to make it quite realistic.
Yeah, that's what I do when I write. I'm also an author and a writer. You do exactly what I do. I write fiction, but I bring it into the realm of the 21st century. I write urban fiction sometimes, but I bring it into things that are going on now. So I try to get my reader to relate to something that I've written that's fiction, into what might be going on in their lives right now today.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because what I promise the reader, and obviously not you can't satisfy all readers, but I think that if a reader picks up a series of books, especially the first one, 2020, it'll be realistic, but it'll be a very unique reading experience, because I meld in some historical some historical facts in it as well. There's some social messaging that gets transmitted by some of the characters, and I think it'll resonate with a lot of people today.
Yeah.
Again, based on some of the things that the country's experiencing.
I do too. I totally do agree with that, because a lot of my stuff resonates with people, and that's what I try to do. I get whatever I write to resonate with people, especially in the current situation and the current climate that we're in. Some of my fiction, I try to get people to actually mobilize to do something about their situations. And I know you're here to talk about your book. So which book are you going to be talking about?
Well, we can talk today about 2020 again, which is the first book in the trilogy. If you want to ask me specific questions, or I can kind of freely discuss, some of the things about the book, how would you like to approach it?
Well, you can talk about the book, and as soon as my head or my brain generate a question, I'll jump in right quick. You can just
Well,
all right.
If you know, the best way to talk about the book is in if you read the back cover of my book, I say that 2020 is a fusion of historical events with a near-term look at the future. I try to say that it's a thriller that's very convincing in its accuracy. That, you know, by the time you finish the book, which has, you know, a very much a cliffhanger ending, you know, you'll be wondering if some things can really, really happen that materialize this way. The book is
okay.
Follows the protagonist, who's a journalist by the name of Chandler Scott. And Chandler,
can I jump in here, Jim?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to jump in. I want to talk about the title. You say it's 2020. Does that have something? Is that a connotation with maybe seeing clearly, or because I think about a week ago, I went to the doctor to have an eye exam, and he said, your vision is 2020. So you actually talking about seeing the future or seeing something clearly?
Actually, the 2020 refers to, I mean, what you're bringing up is actually very plausible, but the 2020, and if you look at the cover of the book, you'll see the 2020 that has this kind of patriotic theme, and it actually refers to the year,
okay,
more or less,
okay,
that where the book ends, and it very much focused, again, the culmination of the book is the presidential election in the United States of the year 2020.
Okay, go right ahead.
Yeah.
Continue to talk about the book.
Yeah, so Chandler Scott, again, the protagonist, he's a journalist. He's a TV journalist. He works for this international news network called El Mundo, which is based out of Buenos Aires, Argentina. So think of them kind of, you know, somewhat like a Latin American CNN, if you will. And, you know, Chandler is from the United States. He was born on Black Monday, which was in October of 1987. So he was actually born during that stock market crash. Single mom. He grew up in Texas, and then proceeded to get a journalism degree and then another advanced degree at Johns Hopkins University and so forth. So he developed his life as a journalist. He very adventuresome sort, because he didn't really get that growing up, and he cultivated a very important relationship that actually carries through all three books with a mentor, a person who has a technology background. A self-made man, a renaissance man, and now this person writes financial newsletters. So he's very much on top of things. He's got contacts all over the world. He's got contacts within the bowels of the hacking community that exists in the book. There's an international hacker organization by the name of Omni, and Omni is probably, let's say, roughly analogous to an organization that exists in real life, which is called Anonymous. So Chandler, over the course of the book, he discovers some things that are happening, you know, within the political structure of the United States. The country's experienced, you know, some economic shocks that began in 2008 that, you know, contemporarily we're still living through today. And there's some other economic shocks that occur throughout the course of the book. And, you know, George, a very important theme of the book is kind of what, you know, the response that government has when there is a problem. And, you know, in this book, there's these economic shocks that have occurred. There's more safety and security issues that the nation is experiencing, you know, let's say somewhat like you were alluding to earlier in the city of Chicago. And so when that happens, you know, in the book, the public asks for more. So they ask for more safety, more security. And so the government gave them more. Well, it created a very, very much authoritarian state with, you know, a great deal of surveillance where people were very, very leery about, you know, having phone conversations, transmitting email, because everything was being watched. Everything was being surveilled. And, you know, that's kind of the backdrop of the climate of, you know, some of the things that were going on. And with greater economic shocks that occurred in the book, the public asked for more. Well, Congress was, let's say, apoplectic during that time. You know, they couldn't get anything done.
Yeah.
And so there's these international...
Yeah, as they can't get anything done now.
Yeah, I mean, well, and we're talking about some very complex problems. So again, like I was saying, is people, they turned to government to solve a problem. So government, you know, tried to solve that problem for them. They started layering, you know, more and more security, more and more authority, more and more regulation. And when these things happen...
Yeah.
People had a certain expectation about how things were going to work. Then you had more economic shocks. You know, the Federal Reserve is mentioned in the book. You know, they get discredited because of, you know, the more things that they did when they didn't work. And so then you had the appearance of these, let's call international/shadow organizations that then began to influence the government of the United States. And the president of the United States, again, wanting to lead and take a leadership position, you know, he decided that he needed to listen very carefully, you know, to the guidance and counsel of these international organizations. And so they came up with a plan. And they said, okay, Mr. President, you have to do certain things. And, you know, he's doing those things. But it was very, very difficult for him to release that information to the American public because it involved, you know, more, let's say, giving up of sovereignty, let's say financial sovereignty for the country. And all of this, of course, I'm telling you, is in the midst of a presidential election season. So, you know, Chandler is discovering these things, you know, in his role as a journalist. There's conflict that he has with his boss at El Mundo because, you know, he's getting more and more deep into things. And what he doesn't realize is that, you know, his boss is somewhat complicit with these international organizations. So there's that tension there. There's the tension of the election. There's also another very, very important thing, George, in the book, which is in the book, I mentioned that in 2016 and the 2018 season that the United States actually had two what I'll call freestanding third parties that ran for office and were successful. So, and again, this would be different than saying, okay, well, here's who's going to win. It's either going to be a Democrat or Republican. In this book, there were two other parties, one I called the Independent American Party, and another one I called the Theocracy Party. And in beginning in 2018, they started to win seats in state legislatures, a little bit more in Congress. And so they started having a much bigger impact on the politics of the United States. And again, that speaks to what you see today, which is, again, sort of that fracturing that was very, very evident, you know, during the 2016 election. And if I could digress for just one moment, in the 2016 election, one of the things that I've mentioned when I've been on talk shows like this, which was very, very interesting because it served as a great backdrop for my book, is that I felt that you had three candidates, and I'm speaking in reality now, three candidates in 2016 that were running that really didn't embody anything whatsoever about the political party that they were affiliated with in the election. And I'll give you the three examples. One is Dr. Ben Carson. The second one is our president of the United States today. And the third one is Bernie Sanders. And what's interesting about it is, you know, the president we have today, he ran as a Republican, but really he's not anyone of any specific ideology. And Bernie Sanders is technically an independent, ran under the Democratic banner. But while he was running, what did he call himself? You know, a democratic socialist, which is something that is more akin to what you would see on the European continent. And Ben Carson, actually, in the very, very early stages of the Republican primary, actually led. And so what I found interesting is that, you know, in one case you had kind of an unknown.
Yeah, he
Ben
did.
Carson.
He
did.
Yeah, at one time he was leading. You're right. Go right ahead.
So when I look at Ben Carson, Dr. Carson, when I look at Donald Trump, and I look at Bernie Sanders, I look at three candidates there that, again, embodied nothing specific about their party, but they were forced to run under that banner because, again, in this country, we don't really have strong third parties. And so in order to get on TV, you know, be on the debate stage, raise money, blah, 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 you have to affiliate yourself with one of those two parties. And I find it ironic that the guy that's president today really doesn't have any political ideology. He's maybe a Republican more by convenience. Perhaps if some of the things hadn't happened with the DNC this past summer, you might have had Bernie Sanders be the Democratic nominee, which, again, I thought we think would have been very, very interesting to see the outcome of, you know, how that would have gone versus Trump. But the point I'm trying to make is
I totally agree. Okay, go right ahead. I was going to interject, but you can go right ahead.
What I was going to say is that the things that I talk about, again, in my fictional book, which is, again, the existence of these two third parties, and again, freestanding third parties that are actually challenging, that's something that I actually kind of predicted many years ago in a nonfiction book that I thought that by 2016, 2020, you would see people with third party banners that people would be attracted to because they would be very, very dissatisfied with, you know, the GOP and the Democratic Party. Well, I mean, I think it would be hard to argue that people weren't very dissatisfied with both parties in this election. So, you know, rounding back to the book, you have these freestanding third parties that are running for office that, again, kind of make the political, theater, if you will, add to the political theater. And again, it kind of creates some other tensions in the book. Again, when you start reading it, you start to realize that, you know what, this isn't as far-fetched as, you know, as a, you know, you know what they say, the truth sometimes is stranger than fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your book sounds interesting. It sounds, I mean, I was, it sounds very interesting. I mean, I'm just, you know, I just listened to you because I was so engrossed in what you were saying about your book. And I think it's a great book. You're saying that it's doing well on Amazon and all of that kind of thing. Are all of your books have, do all of you, every, does, if I can get this question out, it, does all of your books, all of your writings have a tinge of political fiction?
The first book, George, is definitely heavily oriented into politics because, again, it's centered around a presidential election. I talk about third party politics. The second one, less so, and it has, you know, let's say more. It kind of gets into more of an individualized story. You know, Chandler discovering things. Mm-hmm. You know, the third book will also have a little bit of politics. So, you know, because in all three books, there's always, you know, if you talk about, you know, a fiction story, you know, as an author, you try to create those tensions, right, with the protagonist and maybe another character.
Yeah.
There's always a tension in all these books, which is, you know, the people and then, you know, the government around them. And again, that interaction between the two and how people react to, you know, what I'll call layers of government. You know, so you have, you know, some people that are very, very happy, you know, to have government continue to layer authority upon them.
Yeah.
And then other people that are actually, you know, rebelling very, very strongly in that. And in the second book in the series, which is called Rebellium, which is spelled like rebellion, but instead of ending in O-N, it's U-M, which is the actual Latin spelling. You know, in that book, there's been a reaction by the American, some parts of the American public, to what happened in the first book, 2020. And you have, you know, more of what I'll call, you know, cyber mayhem, if you will, that occurs in the second book. And you really see some interesting things that, again, it gets a little bit more futuristic. But, you know, in all of these books, you know, we're talking things that are going to occur maybe 5 to 7 years from now. That's the time frame. So, you know, you may be starting in the year 2019, 2020, and then the last book ends, you know, somewhere in 2022. So again, not so far in the future to where these things are, you know. It's not science fiction. It's very, very much, you know, using, you know, some of the technologies that exist today, projecting it for just a few years, and kind of seeing how, showing people how that might affect, you know, let's say even politics and governance.
Hey Jim, do you have an excerpt that you can read for us? A little short excerpt from one of your books that you can read.
Yeah, let me read the very first. I'll read just a page or two for the very first book, the start of 2020. So this is chapter one in the book 2020. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain. We'll be landing in Buenos Aires in 2 hours. Our breakfast service will begin shortly. Buenos días, damas y caballeros. American Airlines flight 953 from JFK to Buenos Aires flew smoothly throughout the night, but even traveling in business class did not make for a restful experience. The noise-canceling headphones were wonderful as long as your head didn't tilt too far to one side. It didn't matter since his hunger made him look forward to the eggs and bacon he pre-ordered when he booked his ticket. Maybe it's because he flew so often, but he didn't mind airplane food. He tilted his nose towards his shoulder, inspecting the freshness of his shirt. It passed. The flight attendant came by with a fresh hot towel. His first hot towel experience a few years ago confused him. He unwrapped it, thinking there was something inside. Then he expected a razor and shaving cream. The woman sitting next to him got a towel, so the razor idea was shot. After spying on another passenger, he figured it out. He cleaned his hands and face, getting the sleep out of the corner of the eyes. Mr. Scott, your breakfast. He appreciated the attendant knowing his name. His stomach rumbled from the emptiness. Instead of a full dinner before boarding the flight, he opted for a light snack. So there's a short excerpt.
All right, that sounds great. That sounds beautiful. Where can we find your books? Give us a website, Amazon, or wherever we can find your book, find your work, because it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I would say the best place is to go to my author site, because when you go to my author site, you know, you'll see all of my work. Each book will have its own page.
That's Amazon, right?
I'm sorry?
Is that Amazon?
No, this is my own author page. I'm going to direct everybody to my own author page.
Once they get
to that author page, you will see, again, a little synopsis of the book. You'll hear a reading where mm-hmm. I'll read probably anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes of the book. There will be, and even more importantly, I've created a book trailer for each book, so it's kind of like a little short movie that's, you know, maybe, you know, a minute and a half to 2 minutes long, where you can kind of see kind of some highlights of the book. And then there's buttons there where you can figure out where you want to purchase it. If you want to go, like you said, to Amazon, if you want, you know, for a paper copy, a Kindle copy, and you can come to my own website where, you know, if you wanted to buy an autographed copy of the book, you can do that. And that website is jimmosquera.com. So I'll spell it. It's Jim, JimMosquera.com. So that's JimMosquera.com. And again, when you go there, you'll have, you know, the whole array of books and again, some other goodies there as well.
Yeah. All right. Jim, thanks for being on the show. You were great. Would you like a link? I can send you a link of this show in about a few hours. Would you like that?
Yes, sir. Please send it to that email address that we corresponded on. I would greatly appreciate it.
No problem. Bye-bye. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show back on WTTTY radio, internet radio out of the city of Chicago. Thanks, folks. You've been great. We still have about 35 more minutes left into the show, and we will do it for you folks. Stay with me. All righty. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We still have no budget in the state of Illinois, folks. We have going on 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, and there's no budget in the state of Illinois. Everything is so polarized and political, and one side blaming the other side, and the people who are suffering are right there in the middle. No one gives a damn about those people. So the governor is blaming the legislature. The legislature in Illinois is blaming the Illinois governor, and I'm blaming the governor. I think he solely is responsible for the budget because, you know, it's constitutional, and he's breaking constitutional law. You know, that's one of the things that Republicans do. They break the rules of the Constitution, and they get away with it. A Democrat couldn't do that. Moreover, a Democrat would not break the laws of the Constitution the way Republicans do it. And Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, is no different. However, he's not going to like this, but there are several people running against him. He's up for re-election next year, 2019. He's up, actually 2018. He's up for re-election, and he has I think 9 to 10 opponents, people challenging him for his job. The reason why there's so many people challenging Bruce Rauner for his job next year is because Bruce Rauner is not doing his job. I mean, if Bruce Rauner was the greatest governor Illinois has ever seen, you know, he may not have any challengers at all, but he's one of the worst. That's why so many people are running against him. They put their finger in the wind, and the wind is blowing towards Governor Rauner being blown out in the upcoming gubernatorial election, 2018. He's out of there, and I can't understand for the life of me why would this guy want to run for re-election when he's done exactly nothing but hurt the state of Illinois. How in the hell does he think he's going to win? Well, you know, he's a millionaire, a billionaire. He's going to use his money. From my understanding, he already put $150 million into his reelection campaign. Money is not always the answer. It's not always the answer. Yeah, you gotta have something to run on. He hasn't gotten anything to run on. It doesn't matter what he's done. Good, if anything, that he's done good. Without a state budget, none of this matters. Because without a state budget, that means that we cannot spend money. The state cannot spend money. Actually, the state employees, I think there's about 65,000 to 70,000 state employees in the state of Illinois. They're getting paid. And they are not supposed to get paid because there is no budget. When there is no budget, there's no spending. Spending has to be halted, but somehow they are still getting their paychecks. And the only reason why the state workers in the state of Illinois are still getting their paychecks, it's because of court orders. It's not because of the governor. It's not because of the legislature, because if it had anything to do with these two bodies of government, these people would not be getting paid. Federal judge ordered that they keep getting their checks until these assholes get their act together, which it seems like they never will. Rauner's blaming the legislature, Michael Madigan, and Michael Madigan is blaming Bruce Rauner. I'm getting ready to say Donald Trump. But there's no doubt about it, folks. The fault lies in the governor. This is a budget, and that's one of the criteria of his job. Probably the criteria of his job is to have a balanced budget or budget for the state of Illinois. And we're going on 2.5 years without one. And he's just sitting on the sidelines, watching the state go under, watching the state fall when he could do something about it, but he will not. Because He wants to bust unions. The schools are crumbling and falling down because he's withholding money from the schools that they are earmarked to get. And so, you know, this guy is running for president. Chris Kennedy comes out swinging, calls Governor Rauner heartless. And he is heartless. He'll say that he's not. He'll say that he's not. And all Republicans are, they'll spin it. They'll lie about it. And but we, the people, we know what's happening and we know who's doing it and why it's going on. But, you know, you had Republicans and some politicians, they talk to you like you're an idiot or talk to you as if you don't know and that you should listen to them because they have all the answers. BS. But you got some weak-minded people out there who's going to follow this kind of logic. And I would say, stop it. Stop it. You know, I'm getting back to Rauner, Bruce Rauner, and the state of Illinois. If you've been listening to this show, you know that I, every day on the air that I'm on the air here, I've been railing about no state budget. I mean, I think half the people around, about maybe three quarters of the people around the state itself has been bitching about there being no budget in the state of Illinois. And all of these guys doing that are making excuses. I do agree with Rauner on this, and I've always have. The state was in a financial mess before he even took office. But the irony of it is the state is in a lot more of a mess since he's been in office. So it has gotten no better with him. It has gotten a lot worse because he himself has made it a lot worse. No budget. There's 50 states within America. 49 of those states have a budget. Even with Republican governors, they have a budget. This state, the Illinois, we have no budget. And all these people are doing is making all kinds of damn excuses, blaming this and blaming that, while people are suffering. People are losing their homes. People are losing their jobs. People, social programs are upended. You know, the mayor of Chicago, all he can do is give lip service to it because he's more inclined to saving Chicago and keeping it a sanctuary city. He even had some illegal Mexicans over to his house for dinner. That's how much he loved Chicago being a sanctuary city and how much he loves illegal Mexicans. I'm not talking against immigration. I'm just trying to figure out where his head is when it should be on Chicago crime. I've always said this before, that I think one of the reasons why we have so much crime in the city of Chicago is because we have lackluster police officers. We have lackluster and non-caring politicians. Politicians, you know, I mean, this is why. You know, we have some of the toughest gun laws in America. That's not doing it. The police officers are hindered. They're rookies. And the criminals knows this. These criminals are more sophisticated, tech savvy than any criminals, bad guys in the history of the United States. When you're going up against a thug, I mean, you're going up against somebody who's sophisticated in what they're doing, almost smarter than you are as a police officer. So it's tough. But getting back to the governor, the governor's race for 2018, Chris Kennedy comes out swinging, calling Rauner heartless. I don't think Rauner likes that. I don't think he likes to be called heartless, even though we all agree that this man is heartless and doesn't give a damn and doesn't care. I mean, his main priority is to hurt people and then blame somebody else for it. Not me. I didn't do it. I always said, as long as he wasn't, as long as there wasn't a budget in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, the guy is not doing his job. He hasn't done his job, in my view, in 2.5, almost going on 3 years. He hasn't done it because we have no budget, and he doesn't seem to give a damn about that, because this guy is holding out for reforms. He called them, once he called them some kind of reforms, turnaround. Yeah, that's it. His turnaround agenda, which he doesn't mention anymore. I haven't heard anything about a turnaround agenda because it's not being turned around. There's nothing he can turn around unless he deals with the legislature. And they are made up of Democrats, and they are in control of the General Assembly. He's not. And he's pissed off about that. Bruce Rauner wants power. And he doesn't like it that all these other entities within the city of Chicago have power. He thinks that he should have the power. He thinks that he should be controlling the schools, the public colleges. He thinks that he should be controlling Chicago. But this is a Democratic town, and that'll never happen. He's up for re-election next year. He's going to lose his ass off, because we are going to mobilize people to vote. We've got this jackass Donald Trump in office, and we have to, and the Republicans are controlling Congress. So the best way for us to do anything is to mobilize, rally and protest and tear it all down until changes come. We have people power. They may have the power to do this and do that and make laws and change laws and screw up, but we have people power. We can hit the streets, hit Washington, D.C., you know, because these guys, they don't seem to care about the people who are rallying. They don't seem to care about the people who are protesting. They'll say things, well, you have the right to rally. You have the right to protest. Yeah, that's true, because it's in the Constitution. Yeah, that's true. But that doesn't mean that they like it, that they warrant it, that they want it. We have got to mobilize. I mean, the Republicans are just destroying America. As I've said before at the beginning of the show, America has lost a lot of standing in the world. That is no lie about that. We have lost a lot of standing. And I couldn't blame those countries that are giving us a poor grade. I can't blame them, because I and some other Americans, we are giving this country a poor grade. We have a clown in the White House. We have a con man surrounded by his goons in the White House, and they are going to be running a lot of these agencies like education, agriculture, defense, commerce, energy, healthcare, and human services. We're going to have con men and liars and people with no experience running these agencies, Interior, the Justice Department, Department of Labor, Department of State, Transportation, Treasury, Veteran Affairs. This is crazy. And the only way we're going to fight back, folks, is we have to mobilize. We have to let the Republicans know that we, the people, we are the government. We control this, not you. It's more of us than it is of those clowns in Washington, in Congress. It's more of us. They do the things we don't want them to do. We are going to fight them by mobilizing, rallying, protesting, getting our voices out there. Getting our voices out there and protesting the garbage and the filth that's coming out of that White House and coming out of this administration. We have to stand tall. We cannot back down, or we will fail. We will fail. Trump is the president of the United States. Some people say he should be impeached. Some say within 6 months. Some say within a year, because he's taken this. I mean, you got the Republican Party who says Trump has gone too far. But Trump doesn't give a damn how far he goes. He's Donald Trump. He still has business interests that he is solely involved in while being in the United States. And the Constitution says that's wrong. That's illegal. That's an impeachment offense. But, you know, I think bullying Donald Trump, you know, is not going to get it. Donald Trump is the bully. I mean, this guy knows, and everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie, because he has no proof, no data, no evidence to back up much of anything that comes out of his mouth. Anything. He lies when he lies. He lies on his lies. He lies on top of his lies. And then if you don't believe him, you a scumbag. He's got a war with the press. He's got a war with the judicial system. He's got a war with individual businesses throughout America who refuses to carry his daughter's brand of clothing because, basically, nobody's buying the stuff. Nobody's... and he's pissed off about that. You know, so we have to, and he's doing a lot of things, folks. He's doing a lot of things that with these executive orders that are totally, totally. Donald Trump is doing too much too fast without thinking. And then he has to backtrack, you know, and he's saying a lot of things that aren't true. I think having a war with the press is totally wrong, because the press, I think he should be thanking the press, because when he was campaigning, they gave him a lot of free publicity. They may be the reason why he's in office today, because all saying they're fake news, they're despicable. You know, everything that they write is lies. He's jumping on Saturday Night Live. He's saying that that's a terrible show because it depicts him as an idiot, which he depicts for himself. So it's going to be a trying time in this country until we get rid of Donald Trump. Let's say if Donald Trump is impeached, then we got Mike Pence. And in some cases, this guy is a lot worse. But I believe Mike Pence is more presidential than Donald Trump. He looks and acts more presidential. Donald Trump is a goon, and he acts like a goon. Okay, Mike Pence is, I mean, Mike, you can probably deal with Mike Pence because he's got a lot of crazy ideas too, and he will implement a lot of crazy things on America also. But just like we're fighting Donald Trump, we can fight Mike Pence. I think Mike Pence is a little bit more confined than Donald Trump. Donald Trump just says anything that comes out of his lying mouth. That's the way he is. So we have to keep up the good fight. He just, you know, we have to keep up the good fight, folks. And we're going to do that. Make sure you get out there and rally and make your voices known. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. All right. I just got through talking about Chris Kennedy, one of the kids of Robert Kennedy. He's a businessman. Chris Kennedy threw daggers at Governor Bruce Rauner on Wednesday after announcing he's running for governor, saying Rauner is heartless and will go down as the worst governor in Illinois history. Amen. I totally agree with that. If he doesn't end the state budget impasse before election next year. I just got through talking about that, folks. This is Chris Kennedy, who is running for governor of Illinois in 2018. He's saying that the current governor, Bruce Rauner, will go down in history as the worst governor ever. And we have been saying that for the last year or so, that he's the worst governor ever. But to hear another politician say that about another politician is just so refreshing. And Rauner is the worst governor. And because reason why he's the worst governor in Illinois history right now at this minute is because Illinois has never been through this. Even if we had all kind of financial problems, we've always had a budget. We are going on 2 years, 2.5 years without a budget. And Rauner is just sitting his ass on the sidelines watching this, watching the state crash and burn. And once the state crashes and burns, what will Bruce Rauner do? He's going to blame someone else for it. It's not his fault. He came in on a bad situation. Yes, he did, but he made it even worse. And that's not me. That's not the George Wilder Jr. show saying that. That's the Sun-Times, the Tribune, Crane's business paper. That's the media saying that. That's the Illinois media saying that. And I am saying it also. And others have said it. But how Rauner himself doesn't believe it, I mean, that's predictable. You know, yeah, he is the worst governor in Illinois' history. It doesn't, he will not become the worst governor in Illinois history once he loses the election. He's the worst governor in Illinois history right now, today, period. Because Illinois has never, ever been without a budget, no matter how bad the finances were. Never, ever. And this guy thinks not having a budget in the state of Illinois is going to make Illinois a better state. He came in office with the same concept as Donald Trump, making Illinois great. And we're getting the same results as Donald Trump is. It's Illinois has sunk in the standings among all the other states because we do not have a budget. We do not have a budget. And I don't think the General Assembly have enough votes to override Bruce Rauner in order for us to get a budget. Because I think if they could, they would, because too many families are suffering. I mean, you got 65,000 to 70,000 state workers in the state of Illinois who are panicked every day because they fear that their paychecks are going to stop because they know without a budget, the state is not supposed to spend money. They are fearing their asses off. The state workers in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, they're fearing their asses off that their check will not be there when they call the bank to check to see if it's there. And these people have homes, they have cars, kids in college. They need their paycheck that they've earned. And as I've said earlier into the show, the only reason why they're still getting their paycheck right now that they are not sure that they will be getting in the future, because I'm hearing that they are probably going to strike. The reason why they're getting a paycheck still, as I've said, is because of court orders. If anything is being paid to anybody from the state, in Illinois, it's done. It is being done through court orders. That's why the state is somewhat still standing. It's not standing because of Bruce Rauner. It's not standing because of the legislature. Illinois is still standing, or barely standing, I should say, without a budget, barely standing because of the federal judges saying that certain programs are mandatory and they need to be funded. So that's one of the reasons why Illinois is barely standing. But if it was up to Bruce Rauner, if it was up to Michael Manekin and the legislature, Illinois would cease to exist, because they would just blame each other for it while people are dying, literally, you know. So, it's a mess, folks. This is why I say we have to get out here and rally and protest and tell these monsters that we're not going to take it anymore, that we are the people, we're the bosses, we in control. This is our government. You are supposed to be working for us. You are supposed to caring about the people of your state, of your city, not yourself, not your party. None of that. It's the people of Illinois. It's the people of America. We are the ones who are in control, not Congress, not the president. He may sign all these executive authority, but he will not have the authority, because he will be sued, especially when it comes to hurting other people. Have you ever noticed Donald Trump doesn't say anything about making America great again? Because he just lied. He lied. He conned his way into office. There is no doubt about it. He fooled people, because a lot of the people who voted for him, they're the ones who are getting hurt under his proposals or his Muslim ban. And now, you know, Donald Trump is blasting and bullying the judges. Now he's bullying the judges. He's trying to bully them into seeing things his way. The guy is a total bully. And I'm hoping that a lot of these judges and a lot of these businesses around America do not take it. Do not go for it. Do not let Donald Trump tell you how to run your business, because he's not supposed to be in your business in the first place. He's supposed to be in the business of taking care of the United States, taking care of the world, not a business. Just like he was rambling on about The Apprentice and its ratings and Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's the president of the United States. For God's sakes, these other things are trivial. He's not supposed to be affiliated with any kind of business as president of the United States in the first place. As I've said before, that's an impeachment. That's an impeachment offense. But he's going to try and bully his way out of it, because this is what this guy does. This is what he is. He's a bully. And Donald Trump make news all the time. This guy, he just makes news all the time. Getting back to Bruce Rauner and what Chris Kennedy has said, that he is the worst governor in Illinois history. And I totally agree. I totally agree. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there, especially in the state of Illinois, also agree with me. And if you just say he's a Republican, people, oh, yeah, we know Republicans are. We know. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're just about off the air. I believe we got about, six more minutes into the show. It's been great. I want to thank my guest, Jim Mosk. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm not going to even try. And we're going to have some great guests. Tomorrow on the show will be author Rinos Soriano. Okay. We should expect good things. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to do this, folks, and we will be right back with the end.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. like the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw.
Welcome back to the George Waddle Jr. Show. We are just about off the air. I want to thank my guest for being a great guest. And I want to say, I hope you guys join me tomorrow. Tomorrow is Thursday as the date of this show. And it's been fun. It's been great. And I want to thank everybody for being a part of it. Please join me tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody. kissed his ring. These motherfuckers are crazy. Kiss his ring. Oh man. This shit has been slow all day. I wait.